Well, please come with me to Judges chapter 14, and in fact, verse 15, chapter 15 as well, where we met Samson. Now, what do we know about Samson? Well, the old Sunday school answer, he's the strongest man who ever lived. About 4 years ago, Dan Walker and I took a group of lads to watch a game of rugby. We watched Northampton Saints. I can't remember now who they were playing. But after the game, Ewan Murray was playing for Northampton at the time. Ewan, place of Scotland and the Lions, he popped round. And I said, you know, Ewan, he's a big lad. So our lads, they challenged Ewan to an arm wrestle. And there was Ewan, just one arm. And there were six lads, all of them pushing with all their might. Some of them were standing up and bringing their whole weight. And there was Ewan, steady as a rock, unmovable. A strong man. Well, if you took all the props, in fact, if you took all the scrums of England, Wales, Scotland, Ireland, France, South Africa, New Zealand, Australia, and you united them into one 64-man scrum, and on the other side you put Samson, 64-1, they wouldn't stand a chance. Even with their engines fully revved up, when it came to the push, Samson would simply drive them back. Supernatural strength, the like of which has never been seen before or since. But what else do we know about Samson? Well, his head was a mass of locks. He was a Nazarite from birth, so his head had never been shaved, his hair had never been cut. Great mass of locks. What else do we know? Well, he's from a godly home. His parents are believers. But he can't wait to break free. The last thing Samson wants to think about is God. Now, Samson went down to Timnah and saw a woman in Timnah of the daughters of the Philistines. Samson went down to Timnah. He's seen a girl. Here's a young man. He's walking out on his upbringing. He's looking for fun, looking for a certain sort of girl. And mum and dad are dismayed. So he went up and told his father and mother, saying, I've seen a woman in Timnah of the daughters of the Philistines. Now, therefore, get her for me as a wife. Then his father and mother said to him, is there no woman among the daughters of your brethren or among all my people? Is there no one in Israel that you must go and get a wife from the uncircumcised Philistines? And Samson said to his father, get her for me, for she pleases me well. Stop interfering. Stop trying to control me. Stop telling me what I shouldn't be doing. Just go and get her for me. So where's it all going to end? Verse 4, but his father and mother did not know that it was of the Lord that he was seeking an occasion to move against the Philistines, for at that time the Philistines had dominion, had control over Israel. We have four things to say this evening. The first is this. A secret. Have you got a secret? Well, what's Samson's secret? Well, he's met this girl, and on his way back to see her, he's attacked. Verse 5. Now, to his surprise, a young lion came roaring against him. And the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him, and he tore the lion apart as one would have torn apart a young goat, if you've done that, though he had nothing in his hand. Oh, what a story. A lion comes out, yes, rip it in half. That's a story to tell, isn't it? But we read verse 6, he did not tell his father or mother what he had done. The most natural thing in the world, tell them what happened, but he keeps it a secret. A little later, he's back to see this girl again. It's this time to marry her. Verse 8, after some time, when he returned to get her, he turned aside to see the carcass of the lion. And behold, looking at this, he's not seen this before, a swarm of bees and honey were in the carcass of the lion. He took some of it in his hands and went along eating. When he came to his father and mother, he gave some to them. They also ate. But he did not tell them that he had taken the honey out of the carcass of the lion. He keeps it a secret. Well, that's twice now, isn't it? He's kept a secret from his parents. So what does that tell you? Well, to who do you tell your secrets? And who do you keep your secrets from? It tells you who you feel safe with, doesn't it? It tells you where your loyalties lie. So Samson obviously doesn't feel loyal in that way to his mum and dad. And anyway, he's supposed to be a Nazarite, and without going into it, all Nazarites weren't supposed to touch anything that was unclean, like a lion, like a dead body, like a carcass. So if he told his parents, he'd have to go into some big, long explanation, and of course they wouldn't understand, and then they'd be talking to him, and they'd have to, it's just easier to say nothing at all. Because really their world is not his world, and his world is not their world. Because they're believers, they're godly people, they love the Lord. He doesn't. So he doesn't want them to know what he's been up to. Okay, so he doesn't share his secrets with mum and dad. Who does he share them with? Where do Samson's loyalties lie? Well, let's read on. It's going to be a Philistine wedding. He's going to marry this girl. And in the run up to the wedding night, there's going to be a stag party. And by the looks of it, it's quite a bawdy affair. Verse 10, so Samson gave a feast for the young men used to do so. Verse 11, and it happened when they saw him that they brought 30 companions to be with him. Obviously, Samson to look at was fairly formidable. When they look at him, they say, we only feel safe if we've got 30 of our companions with us. He's obviously a big lad. Well, the party gets going. We don't know if there's drink, but it's a Philistine party. It's a bawdy stag party. It seems pretty obvious the drink starts to flow. And then Samson says, I've got a riddle. A bet. If you can work it out, I'll give you 30 suits of clothes, or new suits. And if you can't work it out, then you have to give me 30. Little wager. Something to spice up the party. You up for it? Verse 13. Pose your riddle that we may hear it. We're up for it. The bet's on. So he says to them, verse 14, out of the eater came something to eat, and out of the strong came something sweet. But look at verse 15. The Philistines are fun. They party. But there's another side to them. It came to pass on the seventh day that they said to Samson's wife, entice your husband that he may explain the riddle to us, or else we will burn you and your father's house with fire. Have you invited us in order to take what is ours? Isn't that so? It's all turning very nasty. Get your man to spill the beans. If you don't, we're going to burn you. We're going to set fire to you and your father's house. We're going to burn you to death. And she's caught, isn't she? So she sets about getting Samson to tell her the secret. Verse 16. Then Samson's wife wept on him and said, you only hate me. You don't love me. You've posed a riddle to the sons of my people, but you haven't explained it to me. And you can hear it, can't you? I thought you loved me, Samson. He's saying, well, I do. Well, how can you say you love me, Samson, when you keep secrets from me? If you really love me, there should be nothing between us. You don't really love me. You hate me. And he said to her, and this is it, verse 16, look, I have not explained to my father or my mother, so should I explain it to you? So the secret he's kept from mum and dad, so far he's also kept from the Philistines. So he doesn't belong in mum and dad's world, doesn't belong in the Christian world, in the believing world. But now does he really feel yet he belongs in the world of the Philistines? Remember, he's a lad from a godly home. He's been brought up well. He's been brought up with Christian values, with Bible values. He doesn't feel he wants to be part of his parents' world, but he's not really yet at home in the Philistine world. Maybe he wants the best of both worlds without having to be committed to either. Maybe you know that this evening. Well, of course, she doesn't take no for an answer, does she? Verse 17, now she wept on him the 7 days while the feast lasted, and it happened on the seventh day that he told her because she pressed him so much. Oh, anything for a bit of peace. Then she explained the riddle to the sons of her people. In the end, Samson cracks. He's forced to choose. What he's doing sets up an impossible tension, and in the end, he shares his secret with the Philistine bride. And of course, then she shares it with the Philistines. In other words, what he keeps from mum and dad, he now shares with the Philistines. When he's forced to choose which way you're going to go, is it going to be your upbringing, is it going to be the God of your parents, or is it going to be the world of the Philistines? When he's forced to choose, we now know where his loyalties really are. Not with his godly upbringing, but with his new found friends. Ultimately, he's more at home in the world of the Philistines. So what of you? Now, secrets are okay, aren't they? We've all got secrets. But then sometimes we have a particular secret. You know what I mean. It's the one you've got in your head now, isn't it? If I say, what's your secret? It's the one that you think of, well, that's my secret. The one I don't tell to people. What's the secret you keep from your believing parents? What's the secret you keep from your Christian friends? Because they wouldn't understand. And there'd be awkward questions. And maybe like Samson, you've been touching something that's unclean. It's telling you where your loyalties are, doesn't it? Where your heart really is. Where you feel you belong. You know, maybe you're not a Christian. But you've grown up in a Christian family. You've grown up in this church, in this chapel. In one sense, you're very much a part of the fabric and life of this place. But in another sense, you don't feel you really belong. You can only go so far. You don't really want Jesus. But then again, it's not quite so straightforward, is it? Because although you don't feel you really belong here, you don't feel you belong in that other place. You've got your secrets, but you're not sure you tell your secrets to your unconverted friends. You like the world of the Philistines. You know, the girls are easier. The lads party. But there's something reassuring about home and about this church and about Christians. And there's sometimes things which are very unnerving about your friends. Like Samson found out, they don't know when to stop. Things can very suddenly turn nasty. It is nasty here, isn't it? Entice your husband, then he explain the riddle to us, or else we will burn you. It's supposed to be a party. It's supposed to be a celebration. This is leading up to a wedding. But if you don't tell us, we're going to set fire to you. Maybe that's for you. You don't feel I'm really a part of this church. I'm part of my parents' world, but I'm not really sure I'm part of this world either, because it is nasty sometimes. And maybe something's happened to you recently and it's really unnerved you. It's upset you. You didn't really think that they could be like that, but they are. But look at Samson. You won't be able to keep a foot in both worlds. You can do it for a time, but it creates impossible tensions. And you'll be forced to choose. It's going to be Christ, what I know, what I've been taught, what I've seen in front of my eyes. Or is it going to be this newfound world that I've got? It happened on the seventh day that he told her because she pressed him so much. Then she explained the riddle to the sons of her people. Who do you share your secrets with? That particular secret. Who do you share it with? Well, point number two, we'll call a riddle. Samson has a bet with the Philistines, solved the riddle within 7 days, and you win. So what's the riddle? Well, it's one of the most famous verses in the Bible, isn't it? You'll find this verse in every supermarket, every corner shop. It's on a tin of Tate and Lyle golden syrup. Verse 14, out of the eater came something to eat. Out of the strong came something sweet. Well, as you've seen, they get the answer by threatening Samson's wife. Verse 18, so the men of the city said to him on the seventh day before the sun went down, what is sweeter than honey and what is stronger than a lion? And the way they say it's in your face, isn't it, Samson? Come on, we win, pay up. And Samson, of course, knows what's happened. Verse 18, he says to them, if you're not ploughed with my heifer, with my girl, you would have not have solved my riddle. He knows they've got to his wife. It's a riddle. We now know what the answer is. We always knew what the answer was. It was a lion. There was honey in the lion. But do we know the riddle? Because the best riddles have a riddle within the riddle, don't they? And this is a riddle within the riddle. In fact, within the riddle is another riddle, which we won't get to tonight. It's full of riddles. Out of the eater came something to eat. Out of the strong came something sweet. Now, it's the obvious meaning. We've been told that. What is sweeter than honey? What is stronger than a lion? But there's a deeper meaning which the writer leaves us to puzzle out. Have you worked it out? Verse 1, Samson went down to Timnah. Why does he go down to Timnah? Because he's seen a girl. He's become infatuated with a Philistine girl. He says to his dad, get her for me, for she pleases me well. She's the one. So you worked it out. She's the honey. But where is the honey to be found? Inside the rotting carcass of Philistine society. And it's she who brings Samson into contact with this whole new world. So Samson can't get at the honey, that's the attractive bit, without touching the carcass. He can't get at the girl without defiling himself with the world of the Philistines. He wants the sweetness. She makes sin look attractive. He can't resist. She's the one. Get her for me. But he can't get at the honey without making himself unclean. And in the end, all goes horribly wrong, doesn't it? Verse 19, then the Spirit of the Lord came upon him mightily, and he went down to Ashkelon and killed 30 of their men, took their apparel, gave the changes of clothing to those who explained the riddle. So his anger was aroused, and he went back to his father's house, and Samson's wife was given to his companion, who had been his best man. There you are, that's the Philistine way. Well, if you don't want a Samson, we'll give her to the best man. The girls just get passed round. And in the end, the sweetness, the honey, turns very bitter. So if you solve the riddle within the riddle, there are people, there are places who make sin look attractive. Honey is sweet. We're drawn to the honey, and in so doing, we're introduced to a whole new world. And we're drawn in. But where is the honey to be found? It's found inside the carcass of the lion, isn't it? It's found inside a rotting carcass. And you can't scoop out the honey without coming into contact with things which are unclean and without touching them and putting them in your mouth and taking them into yourself. You can't get at the honey without defiling yourself. One day Solomon saw a young man lingering where he shouldn't be. Experienced woman finds him. And she seduces him. She seduces him with the promise of honey. She says, come, let's drink deep of love till morning. Let's enjoy ourselves with love. My husband is not at home. He's gone on a long journey. She said, come on, no one would ever know. Just you and me. Then she says, I've perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, cinnamon. I put Egyptian tapestries on it. And she's saying, it's clean. Everything's clean. It's perfumed. It's beautiful. We can sleep together and it'll be consequence free. And that's why Solomon says the lips of an immoral woman drip honey. And he follows her, this young man, into the rotting carcass of her world. And he thought it would be safe and consequence free, but Solomon's comment on it is, her feet go down to death, her steps lay hold of hell. Have you been attracted to the honey? But you've been playing on the steps that go down to hell. Maybe it's the honey that's on the web, or in college or school or in the office or something, and it's drawing you in, but it's drawing you down that staircase that goes down only one place. Maybe like Samson, you want to belong. We all want to belong, don't we? Samson wanted to belong. Well, he didn't feel he belonged in his parents well, because they're believers. And the values they have, well, I can't live up to those values. And the things that matter to them, well, they don't really matter to me. I don't belong there. So maybe he's thinking to himself, for the first time, well, maybe I belong here. Maybe this is where I should be. It's just partying, drinking, joking. And he's getting into it, and he's beginning to, you know, they're laughing together. Come on, I'll take you on, let's have a bet. Out of the eater came something to eat, out of the strong came something sweet, and you can hear all the answers, can't you? You know what men are like? Even the riddle is innuendo-laden. And you can't hear their answers being thrown out and a big laugh going up and Samson saying, oh, so I'd be thinking of that. And I wonder if Samson thought, this is great. I love this. I belong. I'm one of them. I'm in. You ever felt that? I don't belong with mum and dad, but I do belong here. It's great. I feel a part of it. But soon it all changes, doesn't it? Because Samson learns that actually the Philistines are just out for themselves. And they're saying to him, do you think you're going to make fun of us if you come here to make a fool of us? Don't you mess with us, Samson. Don't you get in our way. And they threaten his woman, we'll burn her. And then Samson realizes what sort of woman she really is as well, because then she starts to manipulate him. She cries on him, you only hate me. Pure manipulation, isn't it? And then when they win the bet, it's in your face, Samson. And in the end, isn't it? The best man, his best mate. When you have a best man, it's your best friend, isn't it? It's the one you trust. And it's his best man, his best mate gets the girl. That's the sort of world that it is. And it's horrible, isn't it? And maybe you know that. Oh, it's hard, isn't it? It is hard in this world. It is an unfriendly world. School, college, work, it can be so unfriendly. And I want to belong, but I don't feel I belong in with my parents' world. But do I really belong in this world? I remember one New Year before I was converted, I was hoping I'd get an invitation to a New Year's party. But actually, I didn't want to go to a New Year's party because I knew it would be all false, and I didn't want to be part of that. But what was actually worse than getting an invitation to a New Year's party was not getting an invitation to a New Year's party. Not belonging anywhere. I'd rather take something and belong somewhere than not belong at all. Maybe that's how you feel. And it feels great for a bit just to belong, just to feel, but it then goes too far. Maybe you find yourself, do I really feel I want to be part of this? And we're finding out that belonging feels good, but actually the honey of belonging is found inside a rotting carcass. And I've been drawn into things. Maybe there's drink, maybe there's drugs, maybe there's certain sorts of things that go on that I hope my mum and dad don't know about. And always could have been written in the 21st century, couldn't it? You wouldn't have to change much to say this is taking place in 2012. How do you have to change any details, really? And that's easy. Every generation comes along and thinks, well, we're being very clever. We're being original. We're free. That's the honey. That's the attractiveness. We're doing something different that they didn't do before. But we're all in the same rotting carcass. Just like everyone else, just like generations before us, doing that which is dirty, doing that which is dull. What they did then, we do today. Because that's what sin is like. Sin, at the end of it, is dull. There's nothing new in sin. It's just reruns of a previous generation. And if you're not bored already, you soon will be. And so we could find an alternative freedom to the one who actually makes us free. As though there's some sort of alternative goodness out there to the one, the God, who is good. And all the while, what are we doing? We're running down those steps which only have one destination. So point number three, moving on more quickly. We've had a secret, a riddle, now we've got a poem. Verse 15, we almost reach the point of no return. Day 7, sundown, the feast will be over, the marriage consummated, Samson will be joined to the world of the Philistines forever. The lad from a godly home who walked out never to return. But of course, before the sun sets, verse 18, the men return with their answer. Samson's incensed. There's no way you could have known had you not been ploughing with my heifer. It's a good expression, isn't it? And so verses 19, 20, he pays the debt with the shirts of 30 men that he kills, and he storms back to his father's house. Well, Samson cools down. After a while, he comes back, returns to get his bride. Chapter 15, verse 1, and while in the time of the wheat harvest, it happened that Samson visited his wife with a young girl. He's come with a present, a box of chocolates. He said, let me go into my wife, into her room. But her father would not permit him to go in. You can see Samson's trying to get in. His father's standing, her father's standing in the way. What's the problem? Why can't I go in? Let me in. And then the problem is told, isn't it? Verse 2. Her father said, I really thought you thoroughly hated her. Therefore I gave her to your companion. Gave her to your best man. Is not her younger sister better than she? Please take her instead. Give her to your best man. But never mind. You know, there's a younger sister. She's much more attractive. Have her instead. It's what the Philistines are like. Verse 3, and Samson said to them, this time I shall be blameless regarding the Philistines if I harm them. Then Samson went, caught 300 foxes, took the torches, turned the foxes tail to tail, and put a torch between each pair of tails. When he had set the torches on fire, he let the foxes go into the standing grain of the Philistines, and burned up both the shocks and the standing grain, as well as the vineyards and the olive groves. You can see it, can't you? You look out at night, there are no street lamps. You just see fire zigzagging its way all the way through your harvest as these foxes are pulling in different directions through all the grain. It's guerrilla warfare, isn't it? Verse 6. Then the Philistine said, who's done this? And they answered, Samson, the son-in-law of the Timnite, because he had taken his wife and given her to his companion. So the Philistines came up and burned her and her father with fire. Shocking stuff, isn't it? Samson said to them, since you would do a thing like this, I will surely take revenge on you, and after that I will cease. So he attacks them hip and thigh with a great slaughter. Then he went down and dwelt in the cleft of the rock of Etam. Samson's quarrel quickly escalates. Each side pays the other back with interest until we get to verse 8, where Samson attacks the Philistines hip and thigh with great slaughter. I'm not quite sure what that means, hip and thigh with great slaughter, but I think it conjures up what really happened, doesn't it? And now Samson, as far as he's concerned, it's quits. But it's not. The Philistines, with the help of the men of Judah, they arrest Samson. And we pick it up in verse 13 of chapter 15. And they bound Samson with two new ropes and brought him up from the rock. And the Philistines are thrilled. They've got their man, verse 14. And when he came to Lehi, the Philistines came shouting against him. A big cheer goes up. We've got our man at last. But how wrong can they be? Then the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him, and the ropes that were on his arms became like flax that is burned with fire, and his bonds broke loose from his hands. Again, the Spirit of God comes down upon Samson. He's set ablaze. These ropes which are binding him, they melt like burning flax, it's like a hot knife through butter. And now this consuming fire devours 1,000 men. Verse 15, he found a fresh jawbone of a donkey, reached out his hand and took it and killed 1,000 men with it. Escalation again, isn't it? And now this poem. Then Samson said, with the jawbone of a donkey, heaps upon heaps, with the jawbone of a donkey, I have slain 1,000 men. Do you write poetry? Well, that's Samson's poem. It's a bit lost in translation. In the Hebrew, it's a play on words, because the words for donkey and heaps are identical, and they mean a reddish colour. Because donkeys are sort of reddish colour, aren't they? So the poem, it goes something like this. He says, with the jawbone of a reddish ass, I have made a reddish mass. Or with the jawbone of an ass, I piled them in a mass. That's Samson's poetry. Outrageous poetry, isn't it? He's a bit of a joker, this Samson, isn't he? But now something unforeseen happens. Verse 17, so it was when he had finished speaking that he threw the jawbone from his hand and called that place Ramath Lehi, or Jawbone Height. And now look at verse 18. Samson collapses. He's come to the end of himself. He can't cope. This has turned into a nightmare. He was just going down to Timnah to get this girl, and he's ended up. Where have we ended up? It's a nightmare. And the strong man becomes weak, helpless, dehydrated. And now this rebel from a Christian home does what he has never, ever done before. And so our final point, a call. Verse 18, then he became very thirsty. So he cried out to the Lord and said, you have given this great deliverance by the hand of your servant. Now shall I die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised? So God split the hollow place that is in Lehi, and water came out and he drank. And his spirit returned and he revived. Therefore he called its name En-Hakkor, which is in Lehi to this day. And he judged Israel 20 years in the days of the Philistines. Samson calls to the Lord. Now it says here in this translation and other translations that he cried out. That's a bad translation. That's not what it says. In the Hebrew it says he calls to the Lord. That's why the name of the place is En-Hakkor, spring of the caller. He's calling. There's a world of difference, isn't there, between crying out and calling. If you're playing football and somebody kicks you and you cry out, you don't care who hears, do you? But when you want the ball, what do? You call for it. It's specific. It's you're calling to the person who has the ball. You want them to pass the ball to you, so you call to them. Samson calls to the Lord. He's not shouting out. He's not crying out like you've been injured. Someone, anyone help me. It's a call. For the first time in his life, he's looking to the Lord and calling to him. For the first time in his life, he actually wants the Lord. Then he became very thirsty, so he called out to the Lord and said, you've given this great deliverance by the hand of your servant. Now shall I die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised? He's no longer doing his own thing, is he? For the first time, he calls himself the Lord's servant. And no longer is he attracted to the world of the Philistines. He's saying, I don't even want their hands on my dead body. I want nothing to do with the Philistines anymore. I've had enough. I've finished with them. And I'm calling to you. Something wonderful is happening to Samson. He's no longer attracted to the rotting carcass of the Philistines. He wants the Lord, and he wants the Lord more than he's wanted anyone or anything in his life. And he's turning his back on that world that he went into. And he's turning to the Lord. And he's saying, Lord, save me. He's dying, isn't he? He's dehydrated. Lord, save me. What's happening? What's happening is that Samson is converted. Hence the symbolism of verse 19. The rock splits, out flows the water. He's no longer boozing with the Philistines. He's drinking water. Water that flows in the wilderness. And if you know your Bible, the water that flows from the rock in the wilderness is a picture of Christ. And the spiritual reality behind verse 19 is that Samson comes to Christ. He calls the Lord and he's saved. He's now drinking living water. We read verse 19, the water came out and he drank. And what happens? His spirit returned and he revived. He who was dying now lives. It's resurrection. It's a new life. It's a new Samson. That's why never ever again do we read that the Spirit of God comes down upon him. Because from now on he's a man who is filled and indwelt with the Spirit of God. Dying of thirst, calling out to the Lord. Jesus says, if anyone thirsts, let him come to me and drink. He who believes in me, as the scripture has said, out of his heart will flow rivers of living water. This he spoke concerning the Spirit. Samson comes to the Lord for living water. He calls upon the Lord and is saved. So as we close, my friend, what of you? You've grown up in a godly home. You know these four walls very, very well. It's been part of your life. Maybe you're thinking, I wonder how much longer this is going to be part of my life. I wonder how soon I can get out of this place and break free from here. I've got to come for the moment because my mum and dad tell me. But they're believers and I'm not. This is their world, it's not my world. And they like talking about these things, but the last thing I want to talk about is Jesus and the Bible and being a Christian. And maybe you started walking away. You've taken that little journey. Maybe it's gone a bit further. You go a bit further. You go a bit further, don't you? Samson went all the way down to Timnah, went all the way down to the world of the Philistines. And you've been attracted to things you've seen there, because the things you see there aren't in your home, aren't in that world. And maybe the things you've seen there and the people you've met and the things you've done is introduced you to a whole new circle of friends and situations. But you've also gone to the place of temptation. And you've seen the honey and you've been scooping the honey out. You think, well, I won't tell my mum and dad what I've been doing because, well, it's made you dirty. And it's made you unclean. And you put unclean things to your mouth and it's gone into you. Maybe you have been partying with the Philistines. Maybe you think they've got better music, better girls, better drugs, better highs. But then again, you're not entirely at ease, are you? Because they don't seem to know when to stop. Maybe you've even told them some of your secrets and you think, I don't know if they're safe with them. But even as you've told them this, even as you've told them your secrets rather than the world of the Christians, it's showing you where your loyalties are going. And you're being drawn into their world. And maybe things that shocked you 6 months ago, they don't shock you anymore. It's no big deal anymore, is it? And maybe you feel, well, I've got in so far, I'm not sure I can get out again. I'm not sure I even want to get out again. Maybe it's too late. Maybe it is. Maybe you're near the bottom of that staircase. You've been going down the steps and you've been getting nearer and nearer. Maybe it is too late. But was it too late for Samson? Anyway, why has the Lord brought you here tonight? Why would he bring you here? Why would he say these things to you? Anyway, aren't you thirsty? And he became very thirsty. So he called out to the Lord. And the water came out and he drank. Are you thirsty? He was thirsty. He called to the Lord. Maybe that's why you live your life on the surface. That's why you like wall-to-wall music or wall-to-wall something, so you don't have to think too much. Because actually underneath it, that the questions are too deep. And you're so thirsty. And you have found there are pleasures in sin. But those pleasures grow dull. Because sin is boring. You can't sin imaginatively. It's just the same old thing. What they did there is what we do now. And there is an attractiveness in sin, but it doesn't satisfy, does it? Then he became very thirsty. So he called out to the Lord. And God says to every Samson here tonight, everyone who's grown up in a Christian world, a Christian home, who's now beginning to walk out on it. He says this. He says, come, everyone who thirsts, come to the waters. Why do you spend money for what is not bread, and your wages for what does not satisfy? He then goes on and says, he says, listen. And he repeats it. He says, listen to me. This is the words from Isaiah. Listen to me and eat what is good. Let your soul delight itself in abundance. Let him who thirsts come. Let him take of the water of life freely. If anyone thirsts, let him come to me and drink. There is a pleasure in sin. But if you come to the Lord, if you drink, you'll find the pleasures of God are so much greater. And he really does satisfy the ache, the longing, the restlessness, the thirst. He satisfies our souls. Samson was thirsty. So he called to the Lord. It's you I want dealings with. And it was the Lord who satisfied him, who gave him living water. Will you call to the Lord? You say, well, I can't believe. I don't think I can become a Christian. Well, can you call? You can call, can't you? You can call for a bus. You can call someone on the phone. You can call someone when they're walking across the other side of the road. Call to him. You can call to him, can't you? You say, well, I don't know if I could become a Christian. But you're thirsty, aren't you? So call to him. Come to him. Say, give me drink. Because he says, if anyone thirsts, let him come to me. He says the only qualification you need is that you're thirsty and you see that I'm the one who can give you living water. So come to him. Do it tonight. Do it tonight. Please call to him. Ask him in the quietness of your heart, in the quietness of your room, but call to him. And he'll look after the rest. He'll give you faith. He'll grant you repentance so you can turn your back on your sins. Because everything that needs doing, he's done. And he's done it by his cross. The only qualification you need is that you're thirsty. And you call to him. The gospel's wonderful, you know. And you call to him, and he gives you living water. Then he became very thirsty. Are you? It wasn't too late for Samson, was it? And it's not too late for you.